PPI.org.
Wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Annie Harvey is my engineer. And tonight we have Anne Chiappetta on the show, who is an author of many books, who will be talking about her latest and greatest, A String of Stories. Good evening, Anne.
Hello.
We also have Leanne Rowe and Graydon Schlichter. I think I actually even got that. Hello, guys. Wherever you are. Okay, we'll keep going. So they will be joining. They are the narrators, and hopefully they'll be joining us soon. I just wanted to announce that them so that we would know, because I'll be talking to them a little later. But thank you very much, Annie. Annie's been on the show quite a few times for her books. So this latest one is A String of Stories. And Annie, I want you to start out, because there obviously there's going to be people who don't know you and didn't hear your last ones. I can't imagine why they wouldn't have. But let's just start out by talking a little bit about you and tell people what made you decide to become an author.
Okay, so short history lesson, I guess, right?
That's right.
what made me become an author was I had a very vivid imagination as a child, and I loved to read, and that just got me writing. So I would, you know, write kind of funny little things, and little by little, I just expanded stuff. You know, I wrote poetry in school, and I just loved to read. I loved words. I loved the way they strung together, and I loved funny words. I loved to try to, you know, sound out words that were just really hard to spell and things like that. So, when I was 28, I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, and I started to lose my visual world. And I worked as a designer of acrylic furniture, and I couldn't do that anymore. And after a period of time where it was just really difficult for me to just try to address, you know, that creativity and also my adjustment to blindness, I started writing poetry. First, it was poetry about being sad or angry or upset about, you know, my predicament and feeling sorry for myself and that kind of stuff. And then it kind of morphed into other things. And I had a couple of my professors in college said I had a good grasp of things, and they encouraged me. And I took more classes in literature, and I wrote a lot of papers in school, and one thing led to another. And I was writing all, you know, a lot, all the time. And then, you know, after I got out of graduate school, you know, I started, you know, finding a little bit of success in like these small journals and things, writing poetry. And then in 2016, my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and she told me that she wanted me to, you know, write a book of poems and dedicate it to her. So that's what I did. So that was my first book in 2016. It's called Upwelling, and I haven't stopped since. So I write about a book a year.
There's a you know, when you think about your past, you think, yeah, I want to become an author. But that's different than when you, you know, wanting to become an author. And then when you hit some point where you think, I am an author, what was that point for you?
Oh, boy. I think it was when I did my first public poetry reading. And it was just thrilling to me to be in public and people just waiting to hear and to listen to what I was going to say. That is the awesomest feeling in the world. I got to tell you, it is.
So how many books to this date have you written?
I have 4 books. So I have a poetry book, Upwelling. Then I have a memoir called Follow Your Dog, A Story of Love and Trust. Then I went back to some poems and some nonfiction essays called Words of Life. I have 5 books. Sorry. Did I say 4?
You did.
I'm bad at math. And I have the book that we're going to be talking about tonight called A String of Stories from the Heart to the Future, and it's 14 short stories.
Let's see. Well, excellent. All right. So, you know, I know that you kind of have written in a lot of different genres. What's your favorite to write in?
Oh, why did you have to ask me that?
Well, because I like to stretch the imagination. I like to have people know things that they don't know about you normally.
Okay. I think nonfiction is where I'm most comfortable. So I would say probably the nonfiction, the essays, a memoir writing, things like that. But when I really finish something that I feel proud about, it's when I do something well in fiction. It's so much harder for me. So much harder.
Is that your favorite genre to read, is fiction?
Yes.
Ah, gotcha. So your writing genre and reading are different. That are your favorites.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that makes you, you know, gives you some diversity. I wonder, what do you feel makes a good book or a good story?
Great question. I think that once you finish reading a book, well, let me go back. Okay. If you're going to get past the first couple of chapters and you can't put it down and you have to stay up until 3 in the morning to finish it, that's a really good book. Okay. So same thing with a story. Like if you finish that story and the last line makes you feel something, whether it's, even if it's disappointment, oh, I can't believe they ended it there, or wow, or you feel like, wow, that was, you know, that was really touching. Or if it brings emotion into your life, you know, or you think about it and it resonates with you, then the author's done their job.
Excellent. I have often been told, and I'm pretty sure you've even said this probably, that authors don't like to pick, their books are like children. They don't like to pick favorites. but if you had to say, which book you had the most, that you were the most proud of, what would that be?
Well, they're so different in genre. So it's hard to choose, but I think Follow Your Dog probably would be my favorite because it exposed so much of me personally. And my struggles, and that took a lot of courage. I mean, there were times where I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can share all this with people. I had a struggle with that. Yes.
Yeah, is that the same as like the hardest and easiest book for you to write? Are those the same, do you think? Or is there one that was the hardest and one that's the easiest?
Well, I think after after I did follow your dog, everything else came easier, because to me, that was my expose novel. Like, it was like, you know, like it was, if I'm going to tell people about who I am and what I struggled with, and I did that already, then I could write about anything.
Right.
And I could share anything.
Yeah. You had some pretty strong, you know, emotional areas you've written. And I wondered, like, that would be really hard to share, because that's a part of you. When you share something that's so vulnerable, it's out there and you cannot retract it. So, so everyone knows. And I was just wondering, have you ever regretted anything that you have, like, shared in this type of situation and think, well, maybe I shouldn't have exposed that much of myself?
No.
Wow,
yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm happy with the amount that I've shared, you know, and the emotional content of it. I have no regrets.
Well, that is good, because that means you can sleep with yourself at night. So
I guess so.
That's important. We have Leanne and Graydon with you that are your readers. I want to ask you, how did you choose them as your readers for A String of Stories?
Well, I met Leanne first through my book preparation services people, Lillian and David Dworkin. And I listened to some of her samples, and then we got, you know, we talked, and it was like we clicked, and that was it. I was so nervous at first, you know, and then once I spoke to her, I realized, wow, I can do this. I can allow somebody to express my work for me. And I think that was the biggest hurdle for me was to let it go and say, okay, somebody else is going to read my stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah. So.
So Leanne and Graydon, are you guys with us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely tell Annie that as nervous as she was, I was nervous too, because taking on like personal poetry is really a journey, and you want to do it right by the author. But Annie was so caring, and she gave great feedback. Sometimes I don't know if I understood what she was saying, and she'd say, oh, it's this. And other times I was crying through some of her poems. So yeah, she is just a joy to work with. Absolutely.
So Leanne, if you don't mind, give us a little history about you and how long you've been reading.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that.
I'm originally from Oklahoma. I went to school for musical theater in New York City. And then I moved to LA, and long story short, I wrote a couple of novels with a friend of mine, and I kept on telling my husband, like, I think I want it to be an audiobook. And then one day for my birthday, he bought me a mic and said, you keep on talking about it, maybe you should try it. So I just started recording the novel, and a bunch of my friends were like, you should definitely go forward with this. And so once I put out that audiobook, then it was just work begat more work. Like, I've never stopped working since that first audiobook came out. It's been just exhilarating. I had a friend of mine recommend me to DLD Books, which brought me to Annie. So that's kind of in a nutshell of the process of becoming a narrator. So,
and do you have a favorite genre that you like to read in?
Oh, I like all of them, actually. It's kind of fun, because a lot of times you're voicing either all of the characters or the majority of the characters. And like, what actor doesn't want to play a whole bunch of different parts? So I'd say probably, instead of genre, my favorite kind of character to play is typically the villain. I have a lot of fun with British ladies who, you know, they talk like this all the time and have things to say. Like, those are a lot of fun for me. But I am blessed every day and really enjoy what I do. So
have you had to do a lot of different accents?
I have. I've gone through British and like Southern, and I just did a whole novel in a New York accent because the author was a New Yorker. It's a journey. I've stepped into recently one that was French and another that was Hawaiian, which was very interesting. But, you know, typically it's a learning process and just a beautiful thing to hear it when it's finished.
So when you are asked to do an accent, and if it's not one you're you know, really familiar with, how do you go learn that?
I have this wonderful thing called a partner. And my narrating partner, Graydon, is where I thought I was kind of, he's phenomenal. So it's almost like having a tutor in the studio with me, because if I just can't grasp it, he's got it. We'll watch a TV show and the next day he can do the actor's accents or like do impersonations of them right away. So I like to say I have this secret, but it's him a lot of the time for sure. So some of them I can do the work on my own, but other times I need his help, because we just did, what was the one in Austrian?
Yeah,
I just did an Austrian accent for a book that just recently came out, and that was a challenge. So I just never done that before. So
Graydon, tell us a little bit about you and your history and how you got started being a reader.
Absolutely. Well, this is 100% true, but the cutest part of this story is that when I was 5 years old taking road trips with my family, I said one day, I'm going to do that, because we were listening to what were then books on tape. And I said, I'm going to do that someday. And my parents, you know, were very supportive of their five-year-old's dreams. I was also going to be an astronaut and a fighter pilot and a rock star and a super scientist who could cure all of the diseases ever. But one of those things actually happened. I came to LA to pursue a career in voiceover, and fast forward through a bunch of crazy turns that life takes that have nothing to do with voiceover, but you know, our lives, the journey is what makes us who we are. But eventually, I got on track with audiobooks, and I had sort of forgotten my childhood dream until I started doing it. And it was kind of like coming home and realizing, wait, this is what I want to do. I was lucky enough to take some classes with a guy who knows the business really well as the art form very well. And this was back about 10 years ago when audiobooks were going from almost exclusively controlled by the big publishers to individual rights holders like Annie being able to chart their own course with their own narrators. And so I got into narrating then and never really left. But for about 9 years, it was something that I did fit in around all the other things that I do. A lot of folks in LA are multi-hyphenates. They spread themselves pretty thin. But in the last year plus, it has been 60 to 80 hours a week every week. Recording and editing and researching and so forth.
Well, and so a lot of people have that theater background. Did you have that?
Oh, absolutely. I am one of those, pardon me while I push up, you can't see this of course, but pardon me while I push up the bridge of my glasses, stick my nose in the air and say that I'm a classically trained stage performer, which is 100% true. It is interesting to see how many of those core skills translate over to whatever sort of performance art you're trying to do. Because no matter what the medium, you're trying to tell a story. It's just the difference is just which tools you have access to. And I would certainly not be a tiny fraction of the narrator that I am today if I didn't have that background. I'd be somebody completely different.
Graydon and I met doing a show. We were actually on stage doing a...
And what show? I think we lost you guys. Are you guys there? Okay, well, we'll wait for them to come back. But while we're doing that, Annie, I wonder, this is, I believe, the A String of Stories is your current book.
Yes.
And can you tell me, you actually, this is probably the first one you have that's in at Audible, right?
Actually, this is my third book.
Ah,
is on Audible. Yeah.
So you've had a couple on Audible then. How,
yes.
How does one get a book on Audible?
First you have to create an account with the ACX portion of Audible, which is like the author part of the site. You know, you create an author's account, et cetera, et cetera. That's where you would mm-hmm. like upload your files, things like that. Mm-hmm. Then you you record your files and then you upload them to their specifications and you wait until they say, oh, everything's great. I mean, it's not as simple as that. There are different things you need to do. You know, you have to make sure you have, you know, the back matter done, all the front matter done, and have it done the way they want it, you know. So they're pretty critical. But I mean, I got to say, Leanne and Grayson are great. They handled all of the technical stuff for me, because the ACX platform isn't exactly 100% accessible and usable. Mm-hmm. And they just changed things again after, you know, the platform was the same for a long time, and then they upgraded it again. And so then some of the accessibility got lost. So, as a writer with a visual impairment, I'm very fortunate to find the people that can assist me with that portion of recording. There's also the decision whether or not you want to record it yourself, or whether you want to have somebody narrate the book for you, or whether you want to have more than one person do it, having a duet. I was really excited about it because I think it's a creative edge now to have a narration team. And I think what Lillian Graydon did for me is just really cool. I had so much fun just listening to what they did. And, you know, I'm so tickled. So.
It feels like the Audible, I mean, Audible books have been around for a long time. I remember listening to books on tape as well. And of course, we all know Bard, any of us who use that format, but it feels like Audible's just kind of exploded and for a while now. And so do you find that more people are aware of your stuff that wouldn't have been because they heard it on Audible?
Yeah, I actually do think that. I think that, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, someone said, well, you know, your books are on Audible. People are like, oh, okay, that's nice. But now you say, people are like, really? Well, that's great. Where is it? You know, there's so much more. Yeah, there's so much more attention to it now. Yeah.
So in your book, you say short stories challenge the writer as much as if, or if not more than a full length book. Why do you think that?
Because you're telling a story very succinctly, and every word has to count. And not only that, the mechanics have to be pretty much perfect in terms of rolling the story along, and you have to choose where you want to leave the story. I don't like cookie cutter endings. I like the more, offset endings, or the endings that make you say, oh, all of those things have to come together, and you have to do it in 3,000 words or less. That's really challenging, and it's very thrilling when you know you've done it and you finally can say the end.
Actually, cool. This book drove me crazy because I felt like some of the stories, they just stopped, and I was like, yeah. what wait a minute what happened? So I think you should write short stories part two and carry on with some of these characters, because I wanted to know more. So I want to talk about a string of stories. I guess I'm curious to know, because there's several different stories in here. What short story spoke to you two the most? You guys can pick what was your favorite one to read in there.
I personally fell in love, and it's the shortest story in the string of stories, with Trolley Ride. It reminded me so much of like a Twilight Zone, which is something that I just love. I love when they do the marathon for holidays. Like I could just, there's one that was kind of similar to that storyline. And I was like, oh, it's gonna, and just when it was done, I just didn't want it to end. It was so good. And so all the way around, like engaging and terrifying all within, like, I think it's 2 minutes in entirety. But Annie does this really genius thing that I remember from growing up. There's a story later, or when a girl goes to an arcade for a birthday party.
Yes.
And she's younger. She's, you know, 12, 13. And when she goes into the party, the mom comes up and asks her to put her coat on the table with all the other kids. And what's funny is I hadn't thought about that in years, but that's exactly the kind of thing that would happen when I was younger and would go to friends' parties. Like you have to dig through all of these coats to find gloves. It's like she struck a very human chord for sure. What about your favorite?
Well, I'm gonna cheat and do two, I guess, because I have to say I had a ton of fun with Lafayette 10,
oh, yeah.
Which is the science fiction sample in this collection. I had a lot of fun with the aliens in there, and I won't say anything more about that, but just finding their voices was a tremendous amount of fun. But I think if I had to pick my favorite story, it would probably be Bad Medicine. The thing about that story that really got to me was the father-son relationship that is a very, very important element in that story. Yes. I was very, very close to my father, and I lost him last year. And so thank you. I appreciate that. It's been tough. But that the relationship, the sort of gruff relationship where they don't necessarily always see eye to eye, but they definitely care a lot about each other, really resonated with me. And has stuck with me. And they were also just really interesting individuals. And the story as a whole has some pretty rich material to it as well. But it was that relationship that really, really grabbed me, I think.
Oh, and we both really laughed a lot during the story, Surprise Visitor, with the bat.
Oh, good.
I'm not going to give away this story,
yeah,
but
that was good.
We liked it so much. I had to call Annie later and I was like, Derek, I think I wrote you an email, Annie, either or. And I was like, is this a true story? It's so clever and so much fun, but I don't want to ruin it. I'm just going to let you know it'll have you laughing.
It does seem like it could have been one of those crazy stories that really happened. Well, mm-hmm. I'd like to have people take a listen to a piece. I believe it's called A Temporary Perspective. Is that the one you have?
We had Blue Jeans.
Oh, yeah, Blue Jeans. Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right.
That wasn't the first one, though, right? I thought it was the first one, but that's okay. Go ahead and do that one.
Okay. How do I look? Asked Deb, changing the subject, turning around for her friends. They both nodded. You have the best ass in those jeans, and I hate you, said Ashley appreciatively. And your skirt is perfect. The color red is you. You're so curvy, like Jennifer Lopez. Yeah, said Chelsea. I look weird in red. They each applied a cologne spritz and popped in a breath strip, then went into a bar. Deb finished her beer and left a tip to cover both her and Cranston. Now, don't you use this for another round, you hear? She said, pointing to the $5 bill on the table. Cranston winked.
No way, young lady. You've been more than generous with me tonight.
Deb smiled back and went to where Chelsea was slow dancing with her newfound partner. I'm leaving. Do you have a ride home? Chelsea pulled her lips off her partner's long enough to mumble, yeah, thanks. Call me tomorrow. Deb went to the booth where Ashley was making out with her new conquest. I'm leaving, Ashley. Do you have a ride home? She wished that just once she was in the booth instead of Ashley. She loved her, but at times she envied the way men flocked to her platinum blonde hair and willowy leaf figure. Why didn't anyone notice her own Lopez-like curves? She took a look at the pool table. The cowboy she'd been admiring still had his back to the booth. So much for that. Earlier that night, she thought about asking him to play a game of pool, but had chickened out. She was embarrassed enough for one night. Why had she even agreed to come out? Leaving alone wasn't unusual, though. She'd let herself think that Ashley and Chelsea would just once leave with her, but it hadn't happened. Tonight, she felt used and embarrassed for even asking them if they were okay before she cut out. Frustrated, she flung her weight against the back door of the bar a little too hard, and it swung outward, clanging against the outside wall as she left. The gravel crunched under her dexters, and the music and laughter faded as she walked to her truck.
Hey, Blue Jeans!
She turned, lifting a hand to block the glare from the parking lot floodlights. It was the cowboy. He was waving his white Stetson. His hair was a light brown, similar to Rebel's buttery golden flakes. She really was pathetic, comparing the guy to her horse. He came up to where she stood, then put his hat back on, positioning it just so. His teeth were even and white, and his smile was relaxed and friendly. Although the brim of his hat shaded his eyes, they willingly met hers.
Do your friends always make you do the driving?
He asked. Oh, yeah. Since I don't really drink, it's safer that way.
I know what you mean. I'm the designated driver tonight. I don't mind too much, though.
He flashed a quick smile. My name's Deb Fletcher, she said, remembering her manners.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Kyle Buchanan.
They shook hands before they dropped their grip. He turned her palm up.
Wait just a minute.
As he fished in his pocket, his eyes crinkled, and a playful, shy grin appeared on his handsome face. Then he held her hand steadily and placed a stack of quarters in her palm, folding her fingers over the stack. His hands were large, calloused, and warm. He was close enough that she could smell his clothesline-scented shirt. It was 10 times more enticing than any cologne. "What's this for?" she asked, opening her palm, exposing the short stack of quarters.
"Why, it's for the pool game you didn't get to play with me."
She realized then that if he was observant enough to notice her being ignored by her friends, then perhaps the same thing had happened to him. The two guys Ashley and Chelsea were with were the buddies he'd come in with, meaning that he was in a very similar situation. "It's Cranston you should be asking to play," she said. "He's way better than me." Kyle laughed.
"Darling, it's not that I don't respect that old cowboy, but I'm not trying to impress him."
A wide grin spread across his tanned face. Deb blushed a little, and he smiled even more.
"Maybe you want to dance instead?"
he asked. Deb smiled back and nodded. She slipped her keys into her purse as they walked to the door. Kyle held it open for her, and she stepped back inside.
Excellent. Annie, thank you for reading
you
that.
You too?
Yeah. Annie, you want me Welcome. To, you, do you want to talk a little bit about what inspired that?
That particular story was written for my college's literary magazine, which didn't last more than like 2 or 3 issues. No. And it was a romance theme. And so that's where that came from. I wanted it to be about college, you know, about younger people, about that unrequited kind of thing that goes on, maybe feeling a little lost, a little lonely, you know, and just that's where that came out of. I wanted it to end on a positive, tender note. Without being too much, so that's, and I don't know where I got that stack of quarters idea from. That just came out of the blue. I was like, what do I do? How do I finish this? And that's what came to my head. So,
you know, I have to admit one of my favorites in there was the story Kinder.
Yeah.
It was creepy, but yet it was, Can you talk a little bit about that story? I really wanted to know, like, what happened after the discovery. But go ahead and talk a little bit about that.
Well, that story is probably the most biographical story. I did have an Airedale, and his name was Charlie Brown.
Aww.
And And a lot of the events in that story did transpire. And I think that story was the hardest story to end. It was originally part of my novel that I'm writing now. And I took it out of the novel as and made it a standalone story, because I think it deserved it to be a standalone story. And then I will probably use it as some back matter for, you know, or some fill in for the novel, but it's not going to be the same. So, I really wanted it to be, you know, to show, you know, what a family could be like, in circumstances that maybe weren't really positive or perfect circumstances.
When you write stories like this, and you stopped it at the point where the father knew, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you actually envision, but you didn't talk about what came next. So do you envision what comes next, or do you just leave it there?
I think I'm going to leave it there.
Gotcha.
I think I'm going to do that. I feel okay with doing that because the novel kind of picks that up in a different direction. So that's a teaser if you want.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
If you want to know what's going to go on, you got to read the novel, because the novel will pick up the story of that family, of the Raymond family, and expand upon it. So
you tend to write quite a bit about blindness, obviously. That's what you know as a disability topic. But do you write about other disabilities too?
Oh, that's a good question. In the novel I'm writing now, there's a lot of mental illness as one of the threads. The mother lived with a mental illness, and one of the daughters. That's something that I know about, you know, in terms of my family history. So it's, you know, I haven't, in my nonfiction, I do write about other people with disabilities, especially people who are service dog users that may use a service dog, you know, as a deaf person or as a person who uses a wheelchair. So, but I haven't had it flow over into my fiction yet.
Do you consult with them to kind of get a feel of, like, is this so when you're writing?
Yeah. Yeah. I call up my friends and ask them really weird questions sometimes. I have this one friend, and I asked him once, what is it like when you're, like, you know, in your wheelchair, and someone just starts pushing you? How do you handle that?
Yeah.
You know, and he said, well, no one ever asked me that before.
That feels like almost more of a control loss than what people do to us.
Yeah.
You know, grabbing you and try to pull you. So at least you can smack them or something. Right?
Tell them, Ed, watch out. My dog will bite you.
No. Yes. Why do you say that? I tell them I'll bite them. So I just figure the heck with the dog. I'm wondering, what do you do when you have a dry writer's block?
How?
And have you ever had one?
Yes, I do have them. And I think it's more of a frustration with my writing. It's not like a block. It's more like, okay, I'm kind of stuck. I don't know where I want to go. Maybe that's not working for me. And usually what I do is I just let it go for, a day, a week, maybe a month, and then go back to it and I write past it. I don't believe there's any writer's block. I think it's just the story or the words aren't ready to come yet. Not ready to manifest themselves, you know, within your mind so that you can utilize them to write.
Excellent. I think, I hope there was another piece that you guys prepped for Leanne and Graydon.
Yes. This is from a temporary perspective.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so
this is actually the perfect. She'd come out of Josh's room that evening and begun washing out his baby bottles before going to bed. Emilio entered the narrow kitchen and handed her an envelope. She dried her hands and took it. What's this?
Some money.
Some opened it and realized it was a few hundred dollars. A large amount of money now that she'd lost her job and they were living on only one income. She looked up at him, confusion on her wholesome face. Emilio, I don't understand.
I'm leaving,
he said without emotion. Like he might tell her it was 4 o'clock or there was ice cream in the freezer.
It's all I can give you until we get a divorce.
What do you mean? She asked, her entire body going numb.
I can't be with a woman who's handicapped. A kid is hard enough, but a blind wife?
Sloane felt the blood drain from her face and she dropped the envelope to steady herself on the lip of the sink.
Hey, it's not you, it's me,
he said.
I need someone who can keep up with me. You know, driving, working, the bills, things like that.
He didn't even attempt to pick up the dropped envelope. Instead, he went to the fridge for a beer. Salome's legs turned to rubber, and she fought the impulse to simply slide down to the floor. Every word he said felt like a cut to her skin. He went on.
You're still young and pretty, Sloane. You'll find someone who can handle being with a blind chick.
He reached out to tap her on the chin, usually an endearing gesture. When his fingers got close, she slapped it away. Get out, she said, tears brimming in her eyes. Get out and don't ever come back. Emilio smiled, and she hated him in that moment. He stopped to pick up the envelope and placed it on the counter before turning away.
Have a good life, Sloane,
he said.
I'll send you some money for the kid.
He picked up his duffel bag and left.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Well,
this story gets better as harsh as it sounds now. but I want to, I mean, this is not an uncommon perspective or an uncommon situation with people with disabilities. In fact, it's interesting because although I do not have I've never done a total tally. I don't know the studies, but I do know that people who get disabilities after marriage are likely to end up in divorce. More so if the female gets the disability than the male. And it's interesting because I actually saw it. And in my teaching, I teach, you know, technology for people with disabilities. And I can tell you it's much more likely that the female stays if the male gets the disability than the other way around. Although it's not always, it's just more likely. But I wonder if you have any comment in regards to this story, Annie.
Sure. Just Sam, going back to the stuff about the divorce and everything. I was a marriage counselor for veterans for years, and the wives seem to stay with the husbands, but a lot of times if it was the wife that had residual issues from their service, like PTSD, or they. A lot of times that, at least that was my impression, that the men gave up way before the women, but not always.
And my feeling is that women tend to be caregivers or caretakers, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
And so they do tend to stay more. And like, this isn't set in stone by any means, but it's just in my teaching, at least I'd seen more of that. Thank you too for reading. I really appreciate that.
You guys are great.
Thank you.
And that's I thought that one that was very difficult, just the emotion of it. And the, like you said, the perspective itself is, it's rough. I mean, like when you're reading it, you're going, ooh, that's rough, man.
So. Well, and there's so many things in that story where it depends on who's looking at it, that you're seeing what's actually happening. And again, I don't want to give away the twist of the story, but it was very well done, Annie.
Thank you.
So Annie, you want to talk a little bit about what you have in the works?
Okay. So, I have a novel that I've been writing for the last 2.5 years. It's a coming of age novel. If you read the short story, Kender, you'll kind of get to know the family or what might be the backbone structure of the family, or the, some of the characters that might be in that. It's in revisions. I'm probably another couple of months. And then it'll go to the editors, and it may come out by the end of this year. It may not. I'm way behind.
Does the book COVID have a title?
I don't want to jinx it, but no, I'm not ready to give the title yet.
Okay, all right.
And it takes place in the 1970s to 1980s time frame. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that in itself was another challenge. It was to give enough historical information about society at the time, what people were wearing, what we did, socially, what kind of cars, when you do a novel that takes people back into the past, in any historical sense, it's hard. You have to do a lot of fact checking and, a lot of background work, what will people do if they didn't have a cell phone? The kitchen phone on the wall with the cord. Imagine that you bring around. Yeah, a rotary phone. Like, what is that? But I'm having fun with it. And I'm hoping that by the end of the year, it'll be out. So
do you find that your writing style in itself, obviously writing a person's style probably changes somewhat as they go along, but do you find that it was a big change of how you wrote when you could see comparatively as when you can't?
I don't know if I could answer that, because when I could see, I was using my creativity in the visual arts. Mm-hmm. And I was satisfied, with my creativity was in, I was sketching, I was, I was doing woodworking and, all kinds of stuff like that. So I don't think there's much of a comparison, except for that I think I do much more creating now. And I think all of that led up to, having good discipline about it. And I think that's, that's how I developed as a creative person. Just wanting to keep doing it and overcoming whatever I needed to in order to keep it in my life.
Do you feel like how you describe things has changed?
I think so. Yeah. I know there's a lot more that I need checking out now. I've been functionally visually impaired for about 15 years. And though my memory is great, I'm also getting up there in some years. So there's going to be that I've forgotten some things. I need to go back and say, okay, well, what is this like? What was, I'll have some, my family members help me out, or I'll call a friend, or yeah.
We're going to take one last short station break and we'll be right back.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Southside Pride Monthly Newspaper. Locally owned and operated, Southside Pride supports the racial and cultural diversity of the many neighborhoods that make up South Minneapolis. More information is available at southsidepride.com.
And this is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis, KFAI.org. And this is Disability and Progress. My name is Sam. We're speaking with Anne Chiappetta. Anne's an author of many books, her latest called A String of Stories. We also have Leanne Rowe and Graydon Schleiter. Sorry. Yep. I did it right before. I don't know what I was doing. All right. Well, I just want to say thank you to everyone. I think you guys did a great job. And thank you, Annie, again, for coming on the show. Does anybody have any last minute comments?
Just that it was a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
It was absolutely an honor. Thank you. And it was also an honor to be hired to work with Annie. It was just fantastic. If you get a chance, check out A String of Stories. You're going to go on a wild roller coaster ride.
That's for sure. Annie, how can people get your books?
You can go to AnneChiappetta.com. You can look me up on Audible or Amazon. And, you know, my author pages will come up with my books. And I want to thank Leanne and Graydon for coming and just being great sports about everything and doing live readings. I don't know if I'd be brave enough to do that. So,
we're pretty informal here, so yeah. It's all good.
And thank you, Sam. Sam Jasmine, you're great. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate it. And good luck on with this book. And I will actually look forward to reading your next one.
All righty.
This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. And Annie Harview is my engineer. Thank you, Annie. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. If you want to be on my email list, you can email us to talk about future shows or what's coming up, or get an emailer each week of the people that are going to be on. You can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. And also please check out our podcasts. We are now podcasted and have many shows up there. And this one will be up there as well soon. Thank you so much. Good night.